Hi, today is June 28th, 2024, and my name is Junie. Welcome to the Theta Game Podcast. I'm not a financial advisor, and nothing I say is financial advice. I'm literally just a normal retail trader, just like you. I'm not certified or a graduate of finance, just a trader that started on Wall Street Bets years ago. I've lost a lot of money and made all of it back and more after finding a system that worked for me. You can view all my trades for free at thetagame.com/Junie, no signup required. You can email me any questions I'll answer on the podcast at junie@thetagang.com. Lastly, I stream on Twitch every weekday at least an hour at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Come hang out, ask me questions, vent, or just chill. It's a positive environment and everyone is welcome at twitch.tv/realthetagang. I've been using the TastyTrade trading platform since I started my ThetaGang journey 5 years ago. And it feels surreal that I've partnered with TastyTrade and I can focus on bringing you guys and girls the content. If you'd like to sign up and use TastyTrade for your trading journey, you can use my link in the show description or use the ThetaGang referral code, one word, all caps, when signing up. I use TastyTrade every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific time, where I chat and trade with viewers live every morning. Go to twitch.tv/realthetagang if you're interested in joining the chatter and morning hangout. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. And breaking news, McDonald's brings a $5 meal deal. Whew. Yeah, don't know how well that translated into the microphone. I'm sorry to your car speakers if it didn't sound good. I'm sorry about your ears too. But you heard it right. McDonald's has launched what's called the $5 meal deal. You get to pick either the McDouble or the McChicken. You get to pick one of those. And then you get a four-piece chicken nugget, and you get a small fry and a small drink. And you already know that small drink is going to be a Diet Coke for me. This is a really good step for McDonald's, as McDonald's has definitely priced out the lower income demographic, which includes me. Back when I, you know, had a 9-to-5 job that paid, you know, pretty well, I would get McDonald's very frequently. But since I've taken ThetaGame full time, I definitely felt the hit when I continued my McDonald's habit. But since then, I've honestly really stopped going to McDonald's. It just was way too expensive for how I could justify my current income with McDonald's. And they've reported in their earnings calls themselves that they've sort of, gated themselves from the lower income demographic. So they're trying to boost affordability in the next year, and I see this being one of their first big pushes to get some of the lower income people back. And I know it's going to work on me because I'm already thinking about going to McDonald's very soon, maybe either today or tomorrow. I'll probably pick the McDouble. Again, you get the four-piece chicken nugget, you get the small fry and a small drink, or aka a Diet Coke for me. This is bringing back memories of like way back in the day, because for those that don't know, back in my day, and my 31-year-old butt, there used to be a dollar menu, okay? And if there's a younger demographic here, you're probably like, what is a dollar menu? What these days costs a dollar? You're so old, whatever. There used to be a dollar menu. Like, the ice cream cone used to be like 69 cents. You guys remember that? So as inflation went up, and as things started costing more and more money, right, I still remember the dollar menu turning into the value menu. Like, the McDouble, I remember one day I was like skating, because we would skate with a whole bunch of people, and we would all ride down to McDonald's, and we would all order with our like dollars and like quarters that we have in our pockets. And one day I noticed that the McDouble costed like $1.25. And I was like, what? Wait, it's just a quarter. Like, I don't really care. But I didn't actually realize that the dollar menu had just disappeared. It was now called the value menu. So what this means is that because this is a $5 meal deal and you get four of these items, which existed on the dollar menu before, we're just getting a flash of the past right now. McDonald's is essentially getting us each of these items for $1.25 each. It's just that you got to buy all four of these items at once. Whereas maybe, you know, the old me would have maybe only ordered the McDouble and the fries and then maybe got a water cup instead, you know. But now they're actually forcing you to get all four things at once. So everything's costing $1.25 essentially in this $5 meal deal, which is later stages of the dollar menu pricing, but early stages of the value menu pricing before, you know, prices absolutely went insane much later. And I see it as a good move. It's going to definitely get me back in the door. We'll see where the rest of this campaign goes. I think this is a great first step for McDonald's. And again, this isn't an ad. Like, I would love to be sponsored by McDonald's. I would brag that I was sponsored by McDonald's. I would definitely let you guys know if I'm ever paid to talk about McDonald's. Trust me. But yeah, I'm just pretty happy that I have a reason to go back to McDonald's now. Seems pretty cool. I think what this has all taught me, though, is that this break from McDonald's has really taught me the value of what food at home means. And I mean that like in a joking way, but also in a kind of serious way. This break from McDonald's and this break from fast food, because all this fast food stuff has gotten so expensive. Dude, we've been cooking at home a lot more often. And I catch myself all the time like thinking about maybe McDonald's or thinking about Taco Bell, Burger King, or whatever have it, whatever is the mood of the day. And I'm just like, nah, we got rice and side dishes at home. We got some eggs at home. It's cool. You know, and I'm like perfectly fine with it. I think in the beginning stages, I was always like, oh man, McDonald's would be way better. But I feel like this was a great little like sort of fast food detox for me. But now, hey, I get to enjoy like a little McDouble, a little bit of French fry action with a Diet Coke, maybe a few McNuggets. Seems like a good day. Moving on. I do want to say a big, huge thank you to everyone that's been tuning into the stream lately. For those that are regular to the stream, you know that stream numbers lately have been up. I think a lot of it has to do with me helping out around in the dating subreddit. Some people are finding out, you know, maybe click on my profile after me answering a question. And, you know, I get a lot more followers like throughout the day now than I used to because before, you know, people would follow me as I was streaming, which is pretty normal. But like, I'll like wake up one day in the morning and I'll just see that, hey, four people followed me like overnight while I was asleep. And I think it has a lot to do with just like my lasting impact with some of the answers I might be writing for people and then finding out about me later. Maybe they look up something on Reddit and they eventually find my answer and then they do a little bit more digging into my profile leading to the stream. And so I'm trying to lean more and more into this. I like this feedback loop that I'm getting. I feel like a lot of people are getting a sense of that there are nice people out there that are willing to help help trade. And also this like community that I'm sort of trying to rally with is just really, really cool experience. I'm finding out that there are more nicer people out there than I originally thought. Because I think back in 2019, 2020, I had a very, I think, I want to say negative. I wouldn't say pessimistic, or maybe slightly pessimistic. I think that's a more accurate word, right? Like, I was very gung-ho on being transparent like that. I really leaned into that part because I was just so tired of people faking their gains, faking their trades, only posting their winners, never posting their losers. It was very, very triggering to me because here I am, someone brand new, trying to learn, and here's all these people having these really strong opinions, but with no data, no proof to back anything up. And it rubbed me the wrong way. But I think now, since I've had dating.com for a while, I've been streaming for a while, I'm building more of an ethos, there are more and more people that come by the stream and more people willing to stick around. And I think a lot of these people that do stick around are very nice. Like, I'm attracting people that I think are just very kind. They ask thoughtful questions, are very engaged in the stream, and I couldn't ask for anything more. So just a huge thank you. If you consider yourself a regular of the stream, even if you don't chat and you just lurk and you're just there for the vibes, I appreciate that too. So just a huge, huge thank you to everyone that's been stopping by. And with that thank you, that's going to segue into today's topic of Nike's earnings or very red cash secured puts. Because as I am now becoming more and more involved into the subreddit Theta Gang, or the Theta Gang subreddit. That was weird. I don't know why I said it like that. But the Theta Gang subreddit today is just littered with so many people asking about their red cash secured put on Nike. Maybe you're listening to this podcast really late, or maybe you just don't really keep up with Nike stock in general. Nike stock today went from $94 all the way down to $75, which is a 22.5% drop. And that's huge. That's a lot, especially for a low volatility stock like Nike. A 22% drop is no joke. In the last 6 months, it's down 30%. And year to date is down 30% as well. In the last year, it's down 33%. And in the last 5 years, had you held on to this for 5 years, you'd be down 10% on it. So a lot not going so great for Nike right now. But there are some things that I like to talk about for anyone that has a red cash secured put on Nike. And there's a lot of things that we can learn from that. There's a question that sums it up the best that I think is one of the most upvoted posts for today on the R30Gang subreddit. It asks, who else is now doing a wheel on Nike? After today, I'm now in my first wheel. I had CSPs at $88 expiring today. Looks like it would take me a pretty good amount of time to recoup the loss unless Nike comes back up. The thing I'm concerned about is the pricing for selling calls near my 88 strike are very low. So I'm tempted to choose a strike closer to in the money, except there's a risk of my shares getting called away and locking in a loss. Was Nike not a good choice for a possible wheel? So when I stream, I'll usually end the stream maybe like the last 15 minutes or so. I'll go on the R Theta Gang subreddit and I'll find questions like the one that I'm reading today and I'll reply to them. And I typed up something and I kind of want to just like paraphrase it. I don't want to read it word for word on the podcast, but I essentially wrote that Nike is a great stock if you love Nike products. This person's asking, like, was it wrong to wheel Nike? And I think at the core of it, it's not. Like, Nike is a pretty responsible company. They are profitable. They, well, that's, like, I think the most important thing. They're a really big company. They have a large market cap. And I think those two by themselves is enough to warrant that, hey, maybe it is okay to own the stock, or AKA wheel. However, in a much larger context or a larger frame, when you start wheeling other companies, you start to feel like, hey, you know what? Nike isn't actually paying me a lot to wheel this stock. It's not paying me a lot to write this cash secured put. And why is that? It's because Nike isn't as volatile as some of these other stocks. For example, a cash secured put from Tesla might give you like four times what Nike might give you. Because Tesla is very volatile. But here's the thing, and here's the part that makes it really click, okay, is that there's sometimes really weird stocks in the market that you only know are weird if you trade them long enough or you keep your eyes on them long enough, right? Nike, very low volatility and doesn't pay you a lot. Then why the heck did it just move 20% down, right? That's a very volatile movement. So what happened, right? Like, it seems like this really volatile move wasn't necessarily priced in, and it wasn't. There are some times where the premium just doesn't pay you enough and the risk just isn't worth it. For those that play Nike more often than someone else, you might know of this. I feel like there's parallels to PayPal. I feel like right now PayPal also does not give you enough premium to trade options on, because I feel like PayPal can either go up a lot or down a lot, just depending on what they announce or what they do. But being short on options for PayPal feels very bad right now. Selling options on PayPal for me personally, I just wouldn't do it because I feel like I'm not being paid enough, right? Some people might say, hey, it might be appropriately priced because PayPal has been trading sideways for a really long time now. But I feel like it's just going to be like Nike, right? Like, PayPal is either going to go down 20% or up 20%. Maybe not the exact number, but I hope you get what I mean. It's going to move big. The options don't pay enough for me to get in on that trade, but that wouldn't have crossed my mind, this like filter, had I not known that PayPal does move that much from time to time. Just like Nike, no one expected this 20% move, but if you traded Nike enough, you know that these moves are bound to happen from time to time. So in short, to answer this question, they asked, you know, was Nike not a good choice for a possible wheel? I would have just simply said no, right? Like, I know that the premium there was not worth it, not just because volatility was low, but because of my feelings with PayPal. I feel the same way about Nike. The premiums are low, but I also know, because I've been looking at it for a while, that it can move big. I didn't think it would ever move up 20% or down 20% for Nike, but I did know that it could go up in the double digits or down in the double digits, and I just didn't feel like that was worth it. And that just comes from really experience. However, there's one more thing that was just a little glossed over that I feel like there wasn't enough emphasis on from other people's answers, right? Is that this person's cash secured put expired today, aka the day after Nike's earnings, which means that they sold a Nike CSP with the earnings volatility included, which is nice because you get a little bit of juicy premium, right? Everyone expects a little volatility on earnings day or the week of earnings. Therefore, when you sell your CSP, you get just a little bit more premium, and we like that. But what we don't like is that we have to play earnings. Okay, when you write a CSP or you do a cover call or you do anything that includes earnings within the expiry window, you're really signing yourself up to get got. And that's why I always say earnings are dangerous. If I can help it, I choose not to include earnings for my cash secured puts and cover calls. I'll actually have just like my shares get called away, or I'll manage my shares in a way that I don't have any going to earnings. Or if I do have shares going to earnings, it's very thoughtful. Right. This person could have had that same approach. Maybe they were thoughtful of having a CSP expiring the day after earnings because maybe they just had the thought that it wouldn't go down 20%. And that's fair. Okay. But when you can help it, especially if you are new, it seems like you don't have this filter in for your trading system, and it's okay. Right. Everyone did their first wheel for the first time, and not everyone had a fully fledged system right from the get go. But what this person is learning is that, hey, you know what? CSPs during earnings or cash secured puts during earnings, maybe that's not a good idea because earnings are so dangerous. Outside of earnings, I think the CSP would have been okay, right? Like Nike, given the low volatility, maybe we just expect the volatility on Nike whenever there's like some tariff news coming out, or maybe there's some, some earnings news coming out. But if we do know that there's earnings coming soon, we don't want the CSP to include the earnings date. Okay, so far we talked about low volatility, Nike not paying enough, which alludes to like PayPal also not paying enough for the like that surprise move that could happen, but that surprise move can only be known if you've like watched the stock for a while. And then we talked a little bit about earnings and how earnings are dangerous, and we don't want to include earnings for the CSP expiry. Now, I want to just slightly touch on the fact that they observed that the covered call that they would write at the 88 strike price of which they got assigned the CSP at pays very low. And that's true because the stock went down 20%. It's going to take more than 20% to get back up to where it was. The chances of it going up that up to that price again is very low. So therefore, the covered calls that you will sell against your shares that you're going to be assigned are going to pay you very, very little. And I get it. You're probably asking like, okay, so what do I do, huh? What am I supposed to do? Covered calls pay me a little bit. I have a really bad cost basis. What the heck am I supposed to do? My general philosophy here is that you should try to work on your second batch of 100. So for example, you have 100 shares now at an 88 cost basis or somewhere around there with the premium included. I'm not sure how much premium you got. But now Nike is at 75. So if you buy 100 more shares right now, you could effectively lower your cost basis down to maybe 80, you know, and lower your cost basis or how much you're right on by half, because you're effectively doubling down. And then selling the 80, you know, cover call might just barely pay you enough where it makes sense to write those. But here's the thing. The speed at which you pick up the second lot of 100 is up to you, right? You already are going to get assigned on 100, maybe either today or tomorrow, depending on which brokerage you're on. Assignment happens either late Friday or early Saturday morning. But come on Monday, you don't know what to do. The cover calls don't make sense, so you want to maybe buy more shares to lower down your cost basis. Do you buy all 100 at once? Do you dollar cost average? Do you maybe buy like 10 shares a week for the next 10 weeks? And then on their 10th week, you sell two covered calls? We don't know. We never know where the stock is going to go. So this decision is very much different from person to person. If you have followed any sort of position sizing rule, maybe you know that you're supposed to not spend too much money on any one position. So then maybe picking up another 100 shares is actually not a big deal to you, right? Like maybe you're in a 200K portfolio, and this is like, you know, 4 to 5% of your portfolio, and doubling down isn't nearly as scary as someone that's playing with a 10K portfolio that can't even buy 100 shares outright to double to lower the cost basis. So the speed of which you dollar cost average is going to be up to you, but it's hard. It's going to be difficult to dollar cost average because the stock just went down 20%. It's going to test you on whether or not you actually like the stock. If you like the stock and you don't mind holding it for a long time, buying when the stock goes down is really easy. You're just like, yeah, I'll just treat this as like a very glorified savings account. It'll go up eventually. I'll just keep putting money in and it'll be fine. But for those that, you know, get in for the sake of just premium or any news hype, or maybe you saw it from a discussion thread, when your stock goes down 20% and you get assigned on it, you're not going to want to put in more money because you didn't go in on your own accord or on your own thoughts and your own biases and your own thesis. You're now reliant on someone else to convince you to put in even more when that should have been your own plan to begin with. And I hope that sheds some light, because if you pick stocks that you don't mind owning, that you don't mind doubling down on, it makes this like longer game that we're supposed to be playing with the stock market a lot easier. It's a lot less stressful too, right? I personally don't, I'm not like passionate about Nike, so I don't have Nike in my portfolio. I have it on my watch list because I like seeing where apparel goes. I have Nike in my Becky watch list on Robinhood, and that's more for like the stream and stuff, just so you could see what the different sectors are doing. But I don't personally trade Nike because, say for example, I did do a Nike CSP similar to the original poster of this post. I would feel trouble doubling down, because I'm not passionate about shoes. I'm not passionate about apparel, at least as much as someone that might be passionate that's in Nike as well. So that's just something to think about. Dollar cost averaging is a lot easier when you actually like the stock. And I get it. You know, it's one of those things that are just so much easier to say than do, because what's happening is, like, maybe you're also down on Nike. I don't know where you are. Like, I'm talking to you, the listener of this podcast episode. Maybe you're down on your Nike position, and then listening to me talk about this for the last like 3 minutes has maybe convinced you, like, yeah, I actually don't like Nike. I'm just gonna sell it for a loss right now. If you come to that conclusion, I think the most important part is just keeping track of how often you end up closing your stock positions for red. What I love about daily gang style trades is that if I am just like at least a little bit correct in that the market goes up and I'm just like ending up buying stock for a discount on stocks that I already want to own, I will eventually turn my stock position green. And that feels awesome to me. That's the main reason why I like it. It's the main reason why I like playing blue-white control in Magic the Gathering, or ruby-purple in Lorcana. I love playing card games or in styles that I am just making it to the end. And if I could get to the later stage of the game, I'm a beast. I don't care necessarily about the back and forth, the tide that goes back and forth in the beginning of the game. If I could just make it to the end green, I'll win. And that's what's so attractive to me about the Theta Gang style. But if you, or me, and you know, I'll make it about me a little bit here. If I keep closing my stock positions for red. Like, say, for example, I wasn't as disciplined with NVIDIA or AMD from time to time, okay? Maybe I am new. I just started this day game journey same time you did. There are times where my NVIDIA stock position is red. And, hey, I could say, you know what? Oh, maybe I got caught up in the AI hype. I don't really love NVIDIA. Oh, I got caught up in, like, you know, just the semiconductor space. Oh, I don't really love AMD. We make justifications for just about everything. And it's up to you to figure out when you're making an excuse and when you're making a reasonable justification. Because there is a difference, but only you can tell. Because this is such a private matter too. It's not like you talk about money or finances to your friends in public. Or, you know, you don't really go nitty gritty with just anyone, right? This is a very much like a... It's like a solo sport, you know? The sports psychology here is very much just you and your headspace and where you get your information, how you process it. And ultimately, it's you tapping the buttons on your phone or clicking the buttons on your mouse. So you make the excuses, you make the justifications, but just be careful when you notice you're selling your stocks for red. There is something to be said there that maybe you're trying to time the market too much, maybe you're changing your mind too much. But if we all fundamentally believe that the stock market does tend to go up, why are we not holding on to the stock, or why are we not managing with cover calls, etc., right? Maybe your stock went down 20% and your position sizing was just a little bit too large and you feel like you're just going to be stuck for a really long time. Maybe there's a case where you sell it and you can, like, maybe gain some opportunity cost from not having your money tied up in Nike and just trade something else in the meantime. But you have to be green on those to make that worthwhile, because otherwise maybe you stay red on Nike, you take a break from trading while you up your auto deposits into your account. There are so many different ways to tackle a red CSP. I would, again, just to sum it up, I would probably work towards another batch of 100 shares and sell two cover calls at one time. That will effectively lower your cost basis enough where two cover calls will make sense. And you would just hope, you know, Nike does rebound. You would then, if in case Nike does continue to go down, you look at picking up another 100 and go from there. But of course, this all relies on this very long affinity, or this very, you have to love Nike, and you have to love Nike stock to be able to do this thing, which, because this is this person's first wheel, I'm not entirely sure if they are into Nike. Maybe they just heard of Nike from a friend, or maybe they saw that Nike was having earnings and they thought this was a good idea, where, you know, maybe buying another 100 shares is not the best idea. Maybe, you know, increasing this position size by 100% is not the best idea. We want to be cognizant of our own portfolio, how much cash we have, and what we want to do. But, you know, a lot of that goes out the window when we get excited, when we want to get that trade in, when, you know, we want to trade with the boys. Everyone's talking about trading in the like in the messenger group. We want to get in there. And it's one of the things that's just hardest to overcome. If you trade with a responsible community, I think it does influence your trading a lot. Trading with other responsible people makes you want to trade more responsibly. And if you find yourself making bad decisions left and right, and maybe it's because, you know, you keep getting coerced into buying calls and going in on earnings, maybe, you know, doing some other risky bet that, you know, you just keep getting, I don't know, sucked into. You get hyped and maybe you're just losing. If you want to take a break from that and you want to trade with other just more responsible people that want to trade in a more stable and predictable way, you can join patreon.com/thetagang, where I have a private Discord filled with other people that trade similarly like me, that we help each other try to improve our strategies. Because I can't think of how many times we've actually had trades posted into that channel, and one of us is like, hey, did you know that earnings were going to be here? Or maybe, you know, I open an NVIDIA trade and I'm like, darn, heads up for anyone that's doing this. This was a earnings play by accident, but I'm going to hold on to it anyway. There's just a whole bunch of natural conversation that comes up when you're a part of a community that shares what they're trading every day. Lots of great natural conversation that comes up on how to make things better or what to look for, or maybe asking people, why did you open this trade? It's a nice experience. If you want more details, go to patreon.com/thetagang, and thank you. From what started as just an idea, then learning how to trade options, then building a logging platform, then partnering with TastyTrade is so surreal to me. If you'd like to trade on TastyTrade, you can see the show description for my referral link or use the ThetaGain referral code, that's one word, all caps, when signing up to help me and support the website, podcast, and stream. This podcast, the website, and stream are all made possible because of my patrons at patreon.com/ThetaGain. Signing up helps keep the services up and alive, as well as pay my own personal bills. I do the website, podcast, and stream full time and is my primary source of income. I feel grateful to be able to do this full time and my focus on providing the best possible service for free. The podcast, website, and stream are all free and it'll stay that way. Signing up for Patreon gives you a few perks, so check it out again at patreon.com/ThetaGain if you're interested in helping support. All right. A huge thank you to all my patrons for helping keep the website, podcast, and stream up. But more importantly than really anything else, like, thank you for letting me be able to stream at 9 a.m. Pacific time every Monday through Friday, because I'm realizing I can do a lot of things in parallel with, like, another job, but, like, I wouldn't be able to stream. So, really, these are the people. When I'm, you know, listing their usernames, these are the users that are effectively letting the stream of all things continue to happen. The stream would not be possible without these people. So I guess I'm just, like, now realizing it even more. But yeah, huge thank you to Fancy Wolf, Los Pepes, Mods, Upstream Puddle, Ensis 88, Espresso Bean, Joe Quirt, EDC, Travella, Desserts, Kevlar 22, Bachata Thug, Nala, J Perkins 86, Louis BG, Troop 947, T Wall 3252, LPL, Alexander Kerm, Slow Motion, Rustier, C Catsy, The Jester, Crown Pound 95, Gruffalo, Young Rich, Chicken Dinner, Kaput, Sumatrix, KJ Martin, Statistically Random, Turbo, Ricky, Maestro XC, Benadushi, Theta Collector, Tyler LM 97, Lord Skeletor, Pig Trader, Major, Tickle Me Elmo, Avrillian, R. Schmitty, YT, Danube 9000, Jayford, LOL, Danger 10, McFly, Spicy Lemons, Husk P, Mr. Integrity, Rooster, Big Dillo, Lloydo, Bearded Savage, Dang High, Clutch, Asho Kabat, Bustin Justin, Andy V, SWH, JH, Spammy Spam, Arfman, Mememe, Vegeta Plank, Can't Make Money, IRL, and Maltman 1856. Just a huge, huge thank you for everyone that supports me on Patreon. It means a lot. I say it at least once, sometimes on stream, sometimes in the podcast, or maybe just sometimes, like, to my fiance or something, or maybe to a friend. They'll be, like, asking, like, you know, how's everything going? And I'll just say, you know, I think that one of the biggest impacts of doing something full-time on your own has been for, I don't know, I guess my mental health, or just, you know, spiritually or, like, wholesomely. I think the biggest difference has been, if you're excited to do something in the morning, it impacts the rest of your day like no other. Like, I remember, like, maybe, you know, tail end of my last job, where I wouldn't be so stoked for, like, the next morning meeting, and I just, like, be kind of dreading it, like, oh man, I'm gonna wake up, I'm gonna be stuck in this, like, you know, it's not the most fun meeting. But, you know, flip side, I'm doing this full time, and granted, I get paid a lot less to this, like, a lot less doing this, but hey, at least first thing in the morning, you know, I make a cup of coffee, I look at stocks for a little bit, and then boom, I'm in the stream hanging out with people that want to be there, right? Like, I think that's one of the things that I'm slowly understanding more and more, is that the people that go to the stream, that I see every morning on the stream, want to be there, which is crazy. And of course, you're like, duh, anytime I watch a video, it's because I want to watch a video, or it's anytime I want to go to someone's stream, it's because I want to go there. It makes sense. But if you take that in comparison to maybe, like, a meeting about, like, company objectives, no one really wants to be there. And I think that that was the most, like, soul-sucking part of the job. And I understand that needs to get done, and that's what you get paid for, and I was definitely trading my time for money. And that could still be a possibility later. Who knows? Maybe Theta Gang doesn't take off as much as I need it to. Who knows? When I start having kids, I probably need to be making a little bit more money than I do now. But that's a worry for just a little bit later. You know, I got to get married first and all that stuff. But as of late, you know, I'm starting to become more grateful of these things where I'm realizing, hey, I'm in a meeting, and that's in quotes, I'm on stream, with people that want to be there. And it feels super good. I don't know. I've been getting these vibes of just like being grateful for the smaller things where I feel like I was maybe already cognizant of that before, but it's just, it's another level when I'm effectively, again, you know, I'm able to take a lot more stuff if I know that I'm getting paid for it. Like, for example, you know, my nine to five job in the tech space was pretty good at pay. But, you know, now that pay part of this equation is completely out, I start seeing the next layer, which I think is the most important one, which is like purpose. Like, it's very purposeful. I go on the stream to make people's days feel better, and I'm sure other people go in there to make my day feel better. It's just a good, purposeful stream. I don't feel like I'm wasting my time when I'm doing the stream because it's very much something that I set up and I like being there and people like being there. It's just a net good. There's no like wasted time, money, or energy into this thing. And it feels great. And I hope whatever sort of future experiences that I get to be a part of, whether if it's another job, maybe someone else's stream, or anything, I want to just keep this vibe up of just like being very purposeful with my time and my energy. Feels very good. Besides that, anything else? Yeah, so, you know, being a one-man software engineering team, I'm in charge of like updating packages, updating services. I think in the last episode, or maybe the last episode, one of those, I talked about one of my software providers for some of my finance data has decided to stop providing the finance data. So I migrated all of that. I switched to a different service. And then I'm now figuring out another one of my services are now being deprecated, and I have to find another provider for that. So I have to swap that out. Not anytime soon. It says that I got till maybe, I think, either September or November. I don't remember which one. But, dude, whenever I get a notification like that, I'm just like, okay, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. So probably do that later today. And that's what I've been going through. I've been just having to do a lot of parallel movement when it comes to progress. Just keeping the service up by rotating services, which is also saying something. It's because I think so far this year, this will be my fourth service that I had to rotate. One of which I'm just using another feature of one that I rotated to. But the point still stands. It means that four of my services have been deprecated, which, I mean, I think that's, it's just showing that the rate cuts are having effect, maybe, you know, or maybe the stock market hype led to some data companies being spawned but not making enough money from interest. Maybe there are a lot of people motivated to use financial data before, but now there's much less. So I'm at this point now where I'm just feeling even more grateful that ThetaGang.com is still relevant, the ThetaGang podcast, stream, all becoming more and more relevant by the day. I feel like my numbers keep on going up. Ever since taking this full time, and it feels great. Like, even though I have to bear the annoyance of having to swap my deprecated data providers out with this other people that are still around, I'm starting to understand, like, oh, there are people that are not able to, or there are other companies that are not able to withstand, you know, what's currently happening in the fintech space. But here I am, I keep expenses low. It's just a one-man team, and it's enough for me. You know, I'm not like a huge company, and now I have to start considering downsizing or anything. It's just always been me, you know, just doing things at my steady pace and how I like to do things. And yeah, I guess that's just something else I want to share. Some fintech services are going out, one of which I'll just, you know, say right now, Adam Finance. I had no idea was being deprecated, you know? That was a very popular app a few years ago, but Adam Finance is now just going to the data side. But TBH, I think they're a little bit too expensive for me, so I'm going to a different provider, which I will not name yet, maybe later. I really want sponsorships whenever I talk about tech stuff, because it would be great if I could get my tech expenses down. But, you know, I'm always on the prowl. That's why there's always this, like, tech flair in this podcast, because it'd be great if I was like, oh, you know, I'm an engineer on a engineering focused podcast where I talk about changes on the website, or, you know, all that stuff. I could get nerdy, but, you know, I've been swaying away from being too nerdy in the main part of the episode. I'm trying to lean more into the finance stuff as a recent, which I think is the better move. But leaving the nerdy and personal stuff for this end here, because if people just want to listen to the topic of the episode and bounce, I'm totally cool with that. But if you want to listen this far into the outro, I mean, just thank you. I mean, I love that you care enough about what I say to listen this far. But I'll let you go. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Had a blast. There's a lot of people getting red on Nike now, and it's going to be tricky to navigate. We don't know if Nike will bounce too quickly. We don't know if it will bounce at all. So do you dollar cost average more? I probably would if I was passionate enough about Nike, but there's a reason why I'm not trading Nike, because I'm not passionate enough about it, so therefore I don't trade in the first place. But if I was passionate about Nike, I probably would. I probably would look to get another 100 shares and follow it down and eventually get my cost basis down where cover calls made sense and work my way out of that. But that really just comes from experience and trusting that your cover call system works, that you always sell cover calls above your cost basis, and all the other soft skills that come into managing trades when they're red. Managing trades when they're green is super easy, because typically whatever you do is going to be somewhat okay. You know, maybe you end up missing out on a few more profits or something if you, like, I don't know, just overextend a little bit. But managing trades when they're red, that's hard. That's difficult. That's where the good and great traders kind of get separated, right? Like, I think a lot of people are good in markets when they're green or when their trades are green. But what do you do when your trades are red? That's what defines you. Damn, that's kind of cool. I'll see you guys next time. Thank you, and hope you have a great rest of your week. Later.